I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. Earlier this fall, Vincent Fenerty resigned as chairman of the Philadelphia Parking Authority after accusations he harassed two co-workers came to light. The Philadelphia Inquirer and Philadelphia Daily News reported that Fenerty collected $250,000 in unused leave benefits, comp time, sick time, and vacation time. Our guest, Pennsylvania Auditor General Eugene DePasquale, called the payout, quote, egregious, excessive, and inappropriate for any government entity. Eugene DePasquale, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
No, thanks for having me.
It may be those things, egregious, excessive, and inappropriate. Is it illegal?
Well, we're working to determine that. First of all, I must have been in a good mood when I said it was egregious, because I don't know how the man sleeps at night getting that money, and I don't know how anyone feels okay in approving that. And we're reviewing right now all of their policies and procedures to determine if they were within their rights to give it. So there's two possibilities. A, it was allowed, or B, it wasn't. And if it wasn't allowed, and again, that's a big if, we're going to take every step we can to make sure that that money is returned. But I don't want to raise anyone's false hopes. There is a possibility that it was allowed. If that's the case, we will come down very hard on the policies and procedures that allowed it.
So you are literally looking at all the policies, all the procedures to see what the language is?
That's correct.
And what's interesting, and perhaps a little disturbing in this case, there were reports that he actually resigned the day before he was expected to be fired. Do you know if that's true or not?
That's another thing we're looking at, too, and this is obviously a decision for the board, why he wasn't fired immediately is one that literally is going to defy all common sense till the end of days, when they knew what he was, the sexual harassment claims have a lot of merit, as we now know. Why he was not fired sooner and why they even gave him the possibility to resign is mind-boggling. But that is another thing that we are going through with a fine-tooth comb.
Are you getting cooperation from the authority?
In fairness to them on this issue, as much as there's reason to have a lot of concern on what they've done in the whole situation with Fenerty, the reality is on our audit, we are getting cooperation. So I at least want to make sure that I point that out.
You say this is inappropriate for any government entity. What would be appropriate? Are you there yet?
I'm the Auditor General of Pennsylvania. You take the governor of Pennsylvania, lieutenant governor, attorney general, state treasurer. We're the five statewide elected officers, and we get a very good salary for what we do. Sometimes with that, you're working weekends. I mean, imagine a situation, and Governor Wolf, and I don't think any of his predecessors would even dream of this, but imagine a scenario where there's a flood on a Saturday, and they have to go out to look at what happened and approve flood relief. Imagine the scenario then where that Saturday night they submit for comp time and administrative time. It's absurd. That's what Fenerty at least is alleging that he did. He was making a higher salary than the governor of Pennsylvania. Let me repeat that, a higher salary running a parking authority than the governor of Pennsylvania, and was submitting administrative time. Now, we're going to go through those records to see if there's any paperwork to back that up. Let's assume for a second that he did. How you could have a situation where somebody is making almost $250,000 a year in salary, running as an executive government agency and submitting administrative time, is literally beyond all rational thought.
Is that because we're talking about an authority, as you say, that's different from your job or the job of the governor?
That's correct. And we have a major, I think, a transparency issue in Pennsylvania, and that is on our authorities, which are scattered all over Pennsylvania. The Philadelphia Parking Authority is certainly unique in that is there's a whole TV show about parking wars in Philadelphia. So,
exactly.
But that one, you don't see the same thing about the Dover Parking Authority. But on a governmental structural level, which I know, boy, I just lost your ratings by saying that.
We're hanging in there. No, go ahead.
But on a government structural point of view, we have authorities all over Pennsylvania that are really beyond the scope of myself as the Auditor General and even county controllers. And this is a major issue, I think, in Pennsylvania. And I've been calling for the legislature to give myself or some other entity the ability to do independent audits.
So we're talking about authorities that are, what, authorized by the legislature, but are, what, quasi-independent?
That's right. That's correct. So how they get appointed is different, usually by county or municipality, who's on these things, how they operate. Now, they usually almost always are subject to the state's right to know law, but they almost always resist these. And then they are almost always not subject to independent audits by either the county controller or the auditor general. In the case of the Philadelphia Parking Authority and the Stadium Authority in Pittsburgh, what is even more bizarre is the legislature gave the attorney general the ability to do the audit. And, you know, Bruce Beamer now, and I certainly I know his predecessors and Attorney General Shapiro coming in, that is beyond the scope of what they normally do. So that's why Bruce Beamer, in this case, in a sense, designated me to do this audit, because it's beyond their level of expertise to do it.
Do you think that's designed to prevent the kind of audit that you're doing, or at least to make it harder for you or other auditors general?
I believe the attorney or the Pennsylvania legislature, when they created this system, did it to make sure no one would be looking at the books of the Philadelphia Parking Authority.
Really? I mean, very specifically to the Parking Authority.
Yeah, and the Stadium Authority in Pittsburgh, where County Controller Chelsea Wagner has been trying to get more transparency there, and the Philadelphia Parking Authority, when those laws were passed in 2001, I believe it was to make sure that then Auditor General Bob Casey wouldn't have the ability to look at their books.
Wow. Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Eugene DePasquale. He is Pennsylvania's Auditor General. We began talking about Vincent Fenerty, the former head of the Philadelphia Parking Authority. He was accused of harassing two co-workers. The local papers reported that and also reported the fact that he is collecting or has collected $250,000 of unused leave benefits. And our guest is looking into that. We want to hear from you. That phone number, 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Are you authorized, Eugene DePasquale, to look into the sexual harassment guidelines or prohibitions at the authority?
From the policies and procedures, yes. Now, if an alleged crime was committed, we don't have the authority to prosecute that. We would hand that over to the attorney general. But on the policies and procedures and how they were investigating their own internal issues, yes, we do.
Have you been able to determine what those policies were and whether they were effectively administrated under the PPA?
The best thing I can say at this point is when the audit is done, no one will look at the Philadelphia Parking Authority prior to our audit as being a model of compliance.
Oh, and when will this report be done?
We are about halfway done with our field work right now, so we're hoping early spring that the full report will be done.
And do you have the kind of clout that if you call for dramatic changes at the authority or even for the legislature, that you will have clout?
Clout, yes. Legal mandate to force the change, no. But I will tell you that whatever we find in this audit, I'm going to give it everything I've got to bring the real change that the people of Philadelphia need.
And that would be about to the attorney general? Would they be the person that would carry on whatever recommendations you have?
Well, by the time this audit is done, Attorney General Shapiro will be in. I've been giving him some briefings along the way, so we'll be working together at that point to, in a sense, force the legislature and the parking authority to make whatever changes we deem are necessary.
Have you talked to Vincent Fenerty?
No.
Do you plan to?
We may, depending on how the audit goes.
You also are looking at things like parking prices and other financial issues related to the Philadelphia Parking Authority. Tell us more about what you specifically are looking at.
Well, and this is somewhat different, although on the same token, if I'm someone who got a parking ticket today in Philadelphia, like going, I'm outraged that I'm paying for Vincent Fenerty's, you know, golden parachute. But beyond that for a second, we are looking to see, comparatively speaking, how does the Philadelphia Parking Authority compare to other type of parking authorities across the United States? So we want to see if it's competitive pricing and how their management practices are and whether it's conducive to actually economic growth in the Philadelphia region. That's A. B, this whole law was created with the idea of helping the Philadelphia schools. And to say that it has not lived up to those promises would be the understatement of the year. And I know we're early into the new year.
And we are earlier into the new year. And there is part of their mandate is that money does go to the school district. Have you been able to determine how much has actually gone to the district, how much they owe the district?
we are going to, when the full audit report is done, we are going to come out what it should be and what it should have been and what it actually was, and those will be two different numbers.
The Fenerty also collected about almost 160,000 in pension. This is the DROP program, Philadelphia's retirement program. Are you looking at that as well?
Well, that is on hand a separate issue, but we, as the Auditor General, I audit all municipal pensions across Pennsylvania, and I have called for an immediate end of all DROP programs across the state, including the one in Philadelphia, as part of the task force that the governor asked me to chair about a year and a half ago now on reforming municipal pensions across Pennsylvania. And this is one where, I mean, look, a cop, a firefighter, people that are, you know, protecting us, them getting an appropriate pension is one thing. Vincent Fenerty walking away with 160 grand a year is just, I don't know how the man lives with himself.
Is there enough oversight? And I think I know the answer to this question, but is there enough oversight of these authorities? And how much does the public have a right to know?
The public, I believe, has a right to know everything that is happening with authority dollars and know there is not enough oversight.
So should authorities then, I don't know, do they do this or not? Do they release their budgets, how they spend their money? Is that public information, public knowledge?
It is public information, but it's much different than, say, when the Philadelphia City Council or any city council across Pennsylvania, you know, mayor submits a budget, you know, there's a public hearing on it, members of council have to vote, the media covers it. You know, I know not everyone likes everything that's in a budget, but there's a very public process that goes with that. The Philadelphia Parking Authority and authorities across Pennsylvania don't do anything nearly as open as that.
What else are you looking at?
Well, you know, I think the parking prices, their policies and procedures, looking into the sexual harassment allegations, those are the main areas, along with, and I think, again, the crucial reason why, obviously the sexual allegation claims are what brought this to light, but the crucial part of the budgetary side of this is, why are they not meeting their mandate to help the children of the city of Philadelphia?
And as you said, this is a report or an investigation ongoing and a report sometime later this year. How many people do you have working on this?
We've got a team of three people that are working on the field side of it, and certainly from but this one is in a sense a different from our normal audits, because my chief counsel and her legal team are working in constant communication with the Attorney General's office, because again, they technically are the one with the authority and they have deputized us to do it. So there's constant communication there, and because of the at least potential for and I want to say potential criminal possibilities here, depending on what Mr. Fenerty may or may not have done. We are obviously working in conjunction with them, if anything we find in that regard as well.
Well, we will talk to you when that report is done. Thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty, for having me. Have a great day.
You too. He's the Pennsylvania Auditor General, Eugene DePasquale. We've got the two Johns waiting in the wings, John Baer and John Micek, talking more about Pennsylvania politics. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moscoen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Members of the Pennsylvania General Assembly were in Harrisburg earlier this week for swearing-in ceremonies for their two-year session. The House is now made up of 121 Republicans and 81 Democrats. The Republicans dominate the Senate 34-16. Democrat Leslie Acosta, who represented the 197th District in Philadelphia and who secretly pled guilty to federal charges of money laundering last year and got reelected, was forced to resign her seat by her party leaders before the start of the session. She got to keep her salary and benefits because convicted lawmakers got to keep their jobs until they were sentenced. That law was changed this week. We asked John Micek and John Baer to talk PA politics, a place they know so well. What's ahead for the Republican-controlled legislature and the Democratic governor? John Micek is editor of the editorial and opinion pages for the Patriot News and Penn Live. John Micek, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Happy New Year, Marty. Nice to have you back.
Happy New Year to you as well. And John Baer, political columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News. And John, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
And Happy New Year, Marty and Misek.
Absolutely. John Misek, let me begin with you. And actually, let me begin with Leslie Acosta. You wrote about these new ethics rules that were put into place earlier this week. What do they say?
Yeah, in Leith Grand, up until now, a lawmaker convicted of certain crimes could hold on to his or her seat until such time as they were actually sentenced under the state constitution. The House, when it came in this week on Tuesday, adopted a new suite of rules, and among them was language that now makes it easier to remove convicted lawmakers who are convicted of certain crimes. And if you give me about 10 seconds here, Marty, I can actually pull that language up for you and explain it to the readers. And maybe Bear can fill for a second while I do that.
Can you fill, Bear?
Well, I can only fill by saying what a shock that our Pennsylvania legislature has finally entered the realm of common sense, at least in one area.
Because we're talking about someone who was convicted but not sentenced, right?
Right.
Are you there, John Misek?
I am. I'm still trying to find that story on our page at the moment. But the short form is that they can now speed it up through a legislative action on the floor, instead of waiting until the legal system grinds through. So they struck something of a blow for transparency there. But even as the House gave with one hand, it took away with another. It speeded up its review time on bills that have been amended by the Senate from the customary 24 hours to just 6 hours. Backers there are arguing that that puts them on level footing with the Senate, which is a similar six-hour review period, although you can make a fairly credible argument that waiting a whole 24 hours so the public has an understanding of the bills that it's going to affect its lives is not that high of an ask.
John Bear, let me go to you. You described this two-year session of 24 months of perfidy. I looked up the word perfidy, deceitfulness, untrustworthiness, treachery, duplicity, double-dealing, betrayal. Does this reflect your frustration with PA politics or something about our legislature?
Yes, both. And all of those synonyms should be in Latin as the motto for the Pennsylvania House.
Really? Pennsylvania. It's come to this?
Oh, it has. As you know, Marty, I've been doing this for a long, long time.
Yes, you have.
I can't recall throughout a 30-year career a time when I've been more frustrated and disappointed in legislative bodies in Pennsylvania and in Washington. And there doesn't seem to be much of an end in sight. It is just what we can do for ourselves. And the rule change that Misek just pointed out is a good example. I mean, what that does is set us up for sneaky stuff.
Hmm.
You can do things in a six-hour period that could impact people's lives, and neither the media nor the public would have any warning, and it just harkens back to the 2005 middle-of-the-night stealth pay raise that they gave themselves. While never adequately funding education or social services, they always seem to find enough money for themselves. This, I would add, just weeks after more than 500 Pennsylvania state employees were laid off just before Christmas, because the legislature, in its wisdom, refused to extend some funding that would have allowed those people and their families to keep their jobs and their health care.
Let me pick up on something that you and I, John Bear, I'm using John first names and last names because we have two Johns on the show. So to you, John Bear, one of the things that you have said for years on Radio Times, you've written about this, is that the legislature is too large, among the largest in the country. There is a bill, Jerry Knowles, in the House. He wants to reduce the legislature, I guess the House, from 203 to 151. Is that give you some cause for some optimism?
Well, as I wrote this week, I mean, it's like the old lawyer joke about 1,000 lawyers chained to the ocean floor. It's not great. It's not enough. But it's a start.
So it's a start.
It is a start, and we'll see if they actually go through with it. Very often these kinds of bills are passed in one chamber so that in an election year, so they can go home and campaign on the fact that, look, we finally hear you. We understand that as the largest full-time legislature in America, and by the way, Marty, there are only three full-time legislatures, California, New York, and us, Why the sixth largest state has to be among the three largest legislatures, I have no idea. But sure, it's a start, and we'll see if they follow through in a non-election year.
What do you think, John Micek?
No.
No.
John's been at this longer than I have, and I've been at this for a while. I've seen these proposals come and go with every single legislative session since 1999. It's a nice gesture on the part of Representative Knowles, but as you know, Marty and his bear well knows, these are constitutional amendments, which means they have to be passed by both chambers in consecutive legislative sessions and then passed by the voters at a statewide referendum. So, yeah, getting these bills out of one chamber, it looks good. And they say, look, ladies and gentlemen of Pennsylvania, we hear you. We get the message. But until such time a proposal ever makes it onto the statewide ballot, it's kind of an empty gesture. And just to go back to what John was saying a moment ago about the pay raise. I mean, this rules change, in fact, was adopted in the wake of the 2005 pay raise, so the chamber would be, so the House would be more accountable to the voters rather than less. And here they are backsliding on it on their first day on the job. I mean, even the U.S. House had the good sense. It took browbeating in the president-elect to revert back on its move to gut a congressional ethics office. But I mean, it's worrying in Pennsylvania on another level, because this was the first action by an expanded Republican majority in the state House, as it was with an expanded Republican majority in the U.S. House. So if they now feel that they have so many members that they are now unaccountable or can do whatever the heck it is that they want, that's a worrying sign. It means that they'll have to have even closer tabs paid on them than usual.
Well, I do want to pick up on that, but let me first get Frank from Philadelphia to join our conversation related to what we're talking about. And Frank, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, thanks, Marty, for taking the call.
Sure.
Yes, I think somebody there, one of your Johns, was reading my mind. That was exactly what I wanted to bring up about the excessive number of members in the Pennsylvania legislature. And not only that, egregiously, which the word was used earlier, they're not there a lot of the time doing their job. How can they do things like monitor the Philadelphia Parking Authority or any other agency in the state when they're not around enough? And the Philadelphia Parking Authority has been compared to a certain totalitarian state in Germany for excessive power. And
well,
so anyway.
Okay, fair enough, Frank. I appreciate the call, and I should say that we were talking with Eugene DePasquale earlier in the hour about the parking authority. But, John Baer, I also see on my computer here that Frank is saying it looks like it's more than just the number of representatives, is that they're overstaffed. And I guess, do you agree with that as well?
Oh, my, yes. I mean, it is thousands of staffers. It works out to roughly 10 per lawmaker, although it's most of it is concentrated in the leadership offices. I mean, this is a legislature that, for example, I mean, the example I always give is it costs taxpayers currently $313 million a year to pay, house, and feed these people and their staffs. The California legislature has half of our lawmakers' term limits, and they're serving three times our population. Somehow that state hasn't fallen into the Pacific Ocean for lack of governance. It's way past time that the people of Pennsylvania just kind of bolt up and say, hey, do something sensible.
That's John Baer, political columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News. Also with us, John Micek, editor of the editorial and opinion pages for the Patriot News and for Penn Live. And we are talking PA politics, something we often do with these two guests. And you can join our conversation. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. John Micek, you mentioned the fact that Republicans are firmly in control of the legislature here in Harrisburg. Where does that leave Democratic Governor Tom Wolf?
It leaves him in a really difficult position for a couple of reasons. I mean, fewer Democrats obviously means that he's going to have to seek more Republican votes for his agenda. And with, some House leaders, including Mike Terzai in as the House Speaker and Jake Corman in the Senate, Scott Wagner in the Senate, them jockeying for, you know, potential gubernatorial bids. It's going to make Governor Wolf's third year even that much more difficult. If there is resistance towards tax hikes in the past, it's going to be even more deeply entrenched now.
Does he want tax hikes, though? I mean, from what I was reading in preparation for the show today, it doesn't look like the governor wants to go down that road again.
No, I mean, he won't be seeking any broad-based tax hikes, that's for sure, a PIT hike or a sales tax hike or something like that. But, you know, we do have this $600 billion budget shortfall, and those things rarely fill themselves without some form of new revenue. So that's going to make those negotiations, I imagine, all the more challenging.
And it seems to me, John Baer, when faced with a budget deficit like that, there's several options. One is more taxes. One is cutting spending. One is consolidation. One is growing the economy. One is relying more on gambling. What do you think the legislature and the governor are considering?
Probably a mix of that. I mean, it seems like the legislature and the governor are on board with some sort of consolidation of government. But $600 million is a big number to try to fill. So there's going to have to be, in addition to that, some revenue from other sources. And it appears, at least I'm willing to bet, no pun intended, that there'll be further gambling, just more expansion of gambling. And if Speaker Terzai gets his way, further expansion of privatization of the liquor system.
Ah. Well, I mean, that is, going back to you, John Baer, I mean, there have been some differences in how we can buy liquor in Pennsylvania. Do you see that as some sign of progress?
Yeah, look, that's always been a big number. Yeah. It's one of those issues that if you poll people and do not bring that issue up, they will never bring it up. If you bring that issue up, they will say, "Oh yeah, we should do away with." So it's one of those inside ball game issues that's very popular for a politician. I think it will help Tom Wolf, for example, immensely in seeking re-election, that he's the first governor in history to actually make some substantive changes to the liquor monopoly in the state that's been around since Prohibition.
And the fact that, I mean, you can buy some wine in some grocery stores. That's a revelation in Pennsylvania.
It's like living in Valhalla now, right?
But I wonder to you, John Micek, looking at the first 2 years of Tom Wolf's time as governor, he was able to get some increased education spending. He did get a tax increase, something he wanted, some changes in liquor laws. Are there issues you think that he can run on, assuming that he might or will?
Well, we now know that it looks pretty good that, you know, Governor Wolf is going to run for re-election. Though there's been no formal announcement, he shifted his press secretary, Jeff Sheridan, over to campaign manager. One doesn't do that unless one is eyeing a re-election bid. But, I mean, that's all stuff that Governor Wolf can point to, and that's stuff that he's going to have to sell really, really hard. The increased school funding, and as Baer said, that he's the first governor, I think, since the invention of beer to actually get something done on Pennsylvania's state-run liquor monopoly. I mean, that's a huge thing. I mean, that's a big deal for Pennsylvanians. He can point to some of the stuff that he's done on opioid abuse as well. I'm thinking together on government consolidation during this year as well. That's something else that people can point to, because God knows Pennsylvania state government is labyrinthine and all-encompassing. But it's not going to be easy by any stretch. Governing Magazine this week pointed out the top three vulnerable Democratic incumbent governors in the upcoming cycle. So he definitely has his sales work cut out for him.
Let me read a tweet from Megan. She says, "Can the guests discuss property tax reform and what the future holds? I live in Lansdowne. I pay high taxes for a poor school district." And there is, John Baer, some discussion about replacing or somehow changing property taxes. What can you tell us?
Well, I can tell you that there is and has been for the last 30 years at the start of every session, middle of every session, by the end of every session. Everybody wants to reform or abolish property taxes. It's never happened. It's never come close. Again, it's a question of confidence in the ability of this legislature to do anything positive. My level of confidence is pretty low. I don't know where Micek stands on this. Property tax is a very heavy lift,
right?
Because it doesn't affect everybody. There are areas of the state where property taxes are not too bad. Statewide, in terms of national context, we're about in the middle. It's not like we're the worst. We're far from the best. A very popular thing to do, very tough thing to do legislatively. in a year where this budget is crushing down on people, I don't have a high degree that it'll get done.
What do you think, Mysik? And we're talking about the potential of $14 billion. I think that's how much is taken in Pennsylvania for property taxes.
That's always been the nut, Marty, is trying to replace that revenue. You know, there's a Dave Argall, state senator from Schuylkill County, who's pushed the boulder on this for the last couple of years, said this week that he intends to reintroduce a property tax elimination bill that would boost the personal income tax from 3.07% to like 4.95% and then hike the sales tax from 6% to 7% and basically do away with pretty much all of the exemptions on groceries, clothing, all the other stuff that people have been used to for low these many years. That was the exact same recipe in a bill that came within a vote of clearing the Senate in 2015. LG Mike Stack ended up casting the tiebreaker on that one, and that one was hobbled by problems, not least of which is the fact that there was no independent review proving that the math worked on it. And so backers this term are going to have to show, as we editorialized just the other day, they're going to have to show their work on this one. They're going to have to prove that they can raise the revenue through the sales tax and the property tax that they collect through their sales tax and the personal income tax that they collect through the property tax. And nobody has ever been able to do that. It ends up as a huge cut for big business because, you know, you've got these big box stores and, you know, industrial giants who are paying property taxes now who wouldn't have to, and that burden would be shifted onto working stiffs. There's another question as to whether or not renters would get a break because, you know, property tax is usually calculated into rent calculations.
That's John Mysik, editor of the editorial and opinion pages for the Patriot News and Penn Live. John Baer with us as well, political columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News. And we are talking PA politics. You can join our conversation by calling us at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane talking with John Baer and John Mysik, who know PA politics. They're getting us ready for the new legislative session facing a looming budget deficit and ongoing pension crisis. We haven't talked about that. And frankly, a lackluster economy. Also, what's ahead for the Commonwealth's Democratic governor after Pennsylvania went for Donald Trump. And again, John Baer writes for the Philadelphia Daily News. Mysik is with Harrisburg Patriot News and Penn Live. You can call us at 1-888-477-9499. These are the guys to talk to if you have questions about PA politics. Radio Times at WHYY.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me read an email from Barbara in Mount Airy. She says some members of the PA legislature, such as Senators Fulmer and Boscola, have sponsored some fantastic bills that would make huge improvements in our state. Bills that take on issues like initiative and referendum, fair districting, fair ballot access, open primaries, to name a few. These bills never make it even into committee. How can citizens force these bills to be reckoned with and voted on? John Mysik, you want to take that?
It's a great question, and if I had the answer to it, I'd probably be doing something else with my life. I mean,
really?
It's the only thing you can ever do, really, Marty. It's keeping the pressure on lawmakers. It's showing up in Harrisburg and at committee hearings and making your voice heard. It's emailing leaders. It's, you know, trying to leverage. And now we have social media. It's trying to leverage the power of social media. So it's still that old fashioned feet on the ground, knocking on doors approach. That's the only way that you're ever going to move the needle.
John, it's interesting thinking what happened in Washington earlier this week when the Republicans tried to basically put the kibosh on an ethics committee. People responded. Apparently the phones were ringing off the hook coming from conservatives, liberals, Democrats, Republicans. So harassing or calling your representative still works?
Yeah, you know, who knew? I mean, you would never think that in a Congress that would ever work in a million years. You know, and it didn't hurt that Donald Trump came down on high from off Twitter to smack them around a bit as well, you know, despite his aversion to transparency on some things as well. But his making his voice heard along with that grassroots uprising really made a difference there.
Speaking of Donald Trump, John Baer, how much do you think the fact that he won Pennsylvania has both empowered the Republicans in the state and basically made the Democrats more of a bit player?
I think it has, at least in the short term, had a tremendous impact. I mean, all of a sudden we have some very brave people who are interested in taking on an incumbent governor, who are interested in taking on an incumbent senator, Senator Casey, in 2018. So I think but they all have this little caveat that, well, we don't know where the national atmosphere is going to be a year from now. And we don't. I mean, if Trump has a modicum of success, they're going to be emboldened to Republicans are going to be emboldened to go after the offices they don't hold. If Trump falls flat on his face, all of that goes away and Pennsylvania reverts, I think, to its natural state of being blue. But right now it's up in the air and it's all dependent, like everything in the world seems to be, on Donald Trump.
But does it, and this goes back obviously to November, but does it, John Baer, show that there was support and voters who in the more rural parts of Pennsylvania who basically canceled out what happened in reliably Democratic Philadelphia?
Absolutely it does, and it reinforces, you know, the old saw about any election day, which is it all depends on who votes. What we learned in this election destroyed what we've known for decades about Pennsylvania politics, which is you can win this state by winning 10 counties, and Democrats have done that over and over again in primaries and in general elections. But when the rest of those counties turn out, it's a whole new world. It's a whole different ballgame. So looking forward, it's going to depend on who the candidates are and who is going to have the power and attraction to turn out the vast majority of those counties in the center and northern parts of the state.
Let me get Paul from Phoenixville to join our conversation. Hi, Paul. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Oh, yes. At one time, we had no personal income tax in this state, and we had no sales tax. This was back in the 50s and 60s. And we had a balanced budget every year. Now we have a problem with the budget every year. And I think the need needs to set up a commission to really review all the expenses. You're talking about $300,000 for the legislature or something. So maybe you could comment on that.
Sure. Paul, thanks for calling into Radio Times. I think it's $300 million. But to you, John Micek, can we roll back the clock? I don't think government did back in the 50s and 60s as much as it did today.
No, I mean, it did not. Pennsylvania government does more things, cost more. Health care costs spike, as you mentioned, as you alluded to, Marty. There's a huge state employee pension burden as well that needs to be reckoned with in the coming legislative session. There are intersections with federal spending and drawdown of federal dollars. Government's a lot more complex than it was in the 1950s and 60s. But still, you have some fiscal conservatives, notably Scott Wagner among them, who's called for zero-based budgeting, that just because an agency got X the year before doesn't mean it should get X plus 3% in the coming year, that it should prove that it needs the money that it's requesting. Those efforts tend to come to naught just because of the inertia of state government.
Hmm. I wonder to you, John Baer, House Majority Leader Dave Reed has talked about restructuring government, seeming to allude to his feeling that we are running government based on some old models. Do you think there's some truth to that?
Yeah, I do. I mean, he said, you know, Pennsylvania government has looked the same for 40 years and has talked about, you know, do we need separate departments? We have a Department of Health, for example, and we have a Department of Human Services. Why can't we combine those, cut back on the bureaucracy, cut back on staff, and therefore cost and space and rentals and all of that? It's a great idea. It's been around forever. People have talked about consolidating government going back many, many decades. Not an easy thing to do,
right.
But there does seem to be some support, particularly from Governor Wolf in terms of consolidation. So, you know, as we said earlier, I think that will show up as part of the mix to try to solve this upcoming budget thing. So we'll see.
an email from David with the question, state retirement benefits change, and we haven't really talked in much detail, John Micek, about the pension crisis. And I wrote down $60 billion, that's B, billion with a B. And this has been, you know, on the table for some kind of action for years now. What's the status?
Yeah, and pretty soon you're talking real money, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, and a pension bill got close in the last legislative session. It came out of the House. They missed it by about 3 votes in the House because some House Republicans were apparently reluctant to place themselves into the new retirement system. What they've been talking about is shifting away from the traditional defined benefit pension that everyone's gotten since time immemorial and going into sort of what's known as kind of like a side-by-side. So you'd have you know, existing employees would have the pension, and then after a certain amount of income, they would be moved into a 401k. All newly sworn in lawmakers and all new hires would be moved into a 401k, familiar to all the cubicle dwellers out there in the audience. And it got, you know, and that's to bring down the cost of benefits, but there's still, and you know, John Baer can talk about this a bit as well, is that unfunded liability. That's $60 billion in benefits that are owed to existing retirees somehow needs to be reckoned with. And that is really, frankly, the toughest part of this puzzle, finding the revenue there to deal with that.
John, do you have any answers? John Baer?
Well, I mean, it's one of those issues, Marty, that is complex and people don't know or care about on such a large level that it's tough to bring it up to get a consensus on. But it's an important issue because that liability is the reason that Pennsylvania's bond rating keeps dropping, and anybody in the financial industry is reluctant to improve it until that gets addressed. Micek made reference to the fact that they seem to be pretty close on doing something with 401ks for new employees. I'd note that the last time they did that, they exempted themselves so legislators would stay in the system, which is the kind of thing that they try to do, and I imagine that will fall into that six-hour new rule. At the last minute, there'll be something to save their ass while putting everybody else into a new system. But that's just me, Marty.
Ed, you know, Marty,
yes, I know that, John Baer. Go ahead, John Micek.
Now, if you're wondering why your local school system is boosting your property taxes every year, I mean, that's another big part of it. This inability to deal with the pension obligation pushes those costs down the food chain as well, and that's when you start seeing those tax hikes by local school systems who are seeing an ever-growing share of their own budgets being devoured by retirement costs.
But, John Baer, Pennsylvania is not alone in this problem.
No. There are many other states. Illinois, I think, is worse off than we are, but we're certainly in the top 5 or 10 in terms of this. And look, local municipalities have the same problem. These one-time, very generous government pensions. There was a time when government was like an employee of last resort. I mean, if you couldn't get a real job, you went to work for the government, and the attraction was great benefits, great health care, great pensions. But the world has changed, and government ought to learn to change with it. That's the core of the argument for making a fix.
John Micek, you wrote about the fact that Pennsylvania is losing population. Now, I don't know whether we're losing more or less than other states. You use the word people are fleeing the state every 11 and a half minutes. You did some of the math on this. But is, first of all, why are they leaving? Where are they going? And could that affect them a congressional seat?
Oh, we already know that it is, that Pennsylvania is going to lose 2 seats in the next round of congressional redistricting, which is going to start in a couple of years. And that means less of a voice on Capitol Hill. That means a smaller tax base. That means, you know, quite a lot of things. But most importantly, it's that question of representation in Washington.
And why are they going? And where are they going?
I don't know. I think some of them are heading south to states with lower tax burdens. I mean, one of the great allures of Pennsylvania is that we don't tax pension income, which is why we have one of the older states in the nation. But you know, the younger people are leaving. That's been a problem that at least 3 governors have tried to contend with, this so-called brain drain, that we don't keep our college grads down on the farm once they're done with school. Cities like Philadelphia and Pittsburgh have made inroads there. Philly in particular is more popular for millennials, as I understand. And Pittsburgh,
is
now with its tech base, is doing much the same. So maybe there's some room for encouragement.
John Baer, he said the word redistricting. You want to talk a bit about gerrymandering? That was one of the things that you have been hoping will happen in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, and I've been hoping for more than half of my life, it seems. There was a recent study by something called the Electoral Integrity Project, which is a joint venture, an international venture out of Harvard and the University of Sydney in Australia, that says there's only two states in America that are worse at gerrymandering, and they're Wisconsin and North Carolina. Yeah. And it's been that way for a long time. If anybody wants a yuck or take a Rorschach test, go and look at the districts at how they're carved up, both in the legislature and the Congress. I mean, they look like ink blots or a variety of animal shapes. What it does is it ruins democracy. It keeps competitiveness out of the process. So you're going to have in Philadelphia always one party. You're going to have in rural Pennsylvania always Republicans. And that's not good. I mean, there ought to be some balance. If there was more balance, we'd be a more progressive state. You asked why people are leaving the state.
Yes.
It's a long-time trend, Marty. I mean, Pennsylvania, believe it or not, is among the largest states, has the highest unemployment rate. We're like sixth from the bottom in terms of unemployment. The Institute of Taxation and Economic Policy says we have one of the 10 most regressive tax systems in the state. If you look at our health care system, and I'm not talking about insurance now, I'm talking about the health of the state. Not good compared to other states. So all of these things kind of combine in the quality of life issue that make particularly young people growing up here, if they're not in Philly and they're not in Pittsburgh, look for places that have a fairer tax system, have a better quality of life, have more to offer than the state. And look, I love this state. Born here, raised here, work here, raised my family here. State has a lot of wonderful attributes and qualities. But when you have a government that is not responsive to the needs and wants of its people, then this is what happens. You start a slide that the policies that come out of, and nobody appreciates how important the state legislature is to the quality of life of the state. And it's a shame, because if it was better, I mean, I've argued for years that if Pennsylvania's capital was Philadelphia,
yep,
we'd have a more progressive state, because there'd be far more attention to what goes on in policies affecting the environment, the economy, taxation, education. As it is, it's largely ignored, and so they can do whatever they want to do, which is very often not very much.
John Micek, I'm giving you the last word. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
Couldn't say it any better than John Baer just did, but he's right. If voters are tired of what's going on in Harrisburg, the best way for them to do that is to make their voices heard. Find out who your local House member is. Find out who your local state senator is, and then just blast them with email to make sure they know that you are paying attention.
And John Micek, there are some new members of the legislature, I'm assuming, you know, ready to get down to work. What's the totem pole there?
There are quite a few. We have at least, three new Republicans over in the state Senate, including one guy from our neck of the woods named John DeSanto, a Republican who replaced Democrat Rob Teplitz. These guys are now coming in as backbenchers in a institution that favors leadership and is top heavy toward the leadership. They're going to have some trouble finding their way. And the challenge for them, of course, is for those who come in with the spirit of reform not to be devoured by the machine within their first year and find that sapped away from them.
Well, on that note, my thanks to both of you. John Micek, thanks for joining us today in Radio Times.
Anytime, Marty.
And John Baer, thank you for joining us as well.
Marty, always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure for us as well. And go to WHYY.org/Radio Times to find out much more about this program. Well, today we say goodbye and we say thank you to producer Elizabeth Fiedler, who is moving on. Liz was a reporter for WHYY for a decade before coming to Radio Times. She brought her intimate knowledge of Philadelphia and Camden and passion for urban and family issues to the show. She contributed to Radio Times in so many ways on and off the air. And while we will miss working with her, she is moving just down the hall to The Pulse, where she will be a reporter, something she does so well. So thanks, Liz, for everything. I'm Marty Moscoane.